Are you ready to go offside? Because it's time for Offside Hockey Talk with your host, James Roberts, and myself, Doug Ireland.
On the far wing, a pass into the slot. Dermott scores! Thomas Dermott jumping into the rush, and Nylander spotted him.
Takes the blue line, drops the puck off. Nylander back to Matthews. He shoots, stopped by Leonard. Rebound, Matthews put it back in front of the net. Duncan Keith feverishly trying to clear it. Can't do it. Matthews shoots. Leonard might have got a piece of that. It's wide. Berry throws the puck at the net. Green light on. Horn sounds. Hawks win.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Maple Leafs weekend in a nutshell. Some good, some bad. We will talk about that and much more coming up on Offside Hockey Talk today. But we are going to jump into the hot button issue that has caught the Twitterverse afire, social media, wherever you're looking, whether it's a newspaper, on the radio, on TV, Overdrive, you're looking at Tim and Sid. This is something that is out there, and everybody has a stance. Everybody has a view. I'm going to give the floor first to my co-host, Doug J. Ireland. Now, just remember, folks, we are a hockey show. We do not dive too much into political stuff, but this is something that was addressed by a member of the hockey media, someone who has a national platform on a hockey show. So this is something we want to talk about. I know a lot of people have been asking you, Doug, what your opinion is on this and if we're going to talk about it. So I'm going to give the floor to you first, and then I'll come up with my rebuttal. But guys, just remember, these are our thoughts. They don't reflect anything that we represent outside of this show, any of the entities that we work for or have sponsorships through. These are clearly just our thoughts on our podcast, so take them for what they are. Two guys just spitballing as if we were sitting around in a room by ourselves talking. Anyways, Doug, the floor is yours.
Can I give the floor back? I mean, not actually, like, you know, it's my turn to talk or whatever, but, yeah, this sucks. It sucks. I really don't know, you know, it's one of those things where, if I say one thing, there's a portion of our listeners that are going to get really, really angry at me. If I say the opposite of that thing, the other portion is going to get angry at me. That's, in a nutshell, that's why Don Cherry was fired, is because it's such a polarizing thing that he said. The thing is, I don't think it was that polarizing. I think that there are people who are predisposed to a certain opinion about Don Cherry based on, you know, the career that he's had, the things he's said over the years. And they are taking all of that and they're applying it to the statement he made on Saturday. Whether or not you can do that is not a question I can answer. The only person who can answer that is Don Cherry. But my take on it, and this is also based on his response and what he said in response to being fired, which is that he was simply trying to get the point across that everyone should wear a poppy. So I think where the issue kind of arises with people is that the way he put it, the fact that it seemed like he was targeting people, maybe he was. Again, it depends on how much you read into all the stuff that he says. And, you know, people see him as like a quote unquote known conservative, known right winger, far right type of guy. To me, the reason I like Don Cherry and have always respected him and listened to everything that every hockey night in Canada that I can with him on it is he knows hockey. I think that's the mistake that he made, was talking about things that aren't hockey, as important as they may be to him or to anyone else. That was ultimately his mistake. And it's not the first time he's made that mistake. He's done that, like, a lot. But at the end of the day, this is a guy who was one of the best hockey analysts that there was. You say what you will about his personal opinions, about his whatever, anything else. When it comes to straight-up hockey, there's a reason he kept that job for as long as he did, in spite of the comments that he seemed to make that were seen as so inflammatory by so many people. Is because he knew hockey. And no matter what We've now lost that. That person is no longer there. There's people out there who are going to say that, you know, this is for the best, that, you know, there's no room for his type of person in 2019. The way I look at it is there's room for everybody in 2019. And what I really hate about the world, what I hate about Twitter, what I hate about so much of life these days is how politics have infiltrated every aspect of everything. And to me, politicizing whether or not someone should wear a poppy is ridiculous. You can say that, you know, honestly, you can say Don Cherry did that, and it's him. He's the one that politicized that by making it about immigrants or whatever. Or you can say that the people who attacked him politicized it or over-politicized it. I don't like any part of it. I watch hockey to not think about the crappy things going on in life. For me, it's fun. The reason I've dedicated my life to it is because I love hockey. I love watching people lay their effort out on the line and how they stack up against other people, how their application of skill and practice and hours and countless days and months and years of building hockey knowledge and building those abilities, how that comes to fruition. That, to me, that's the entertaining part about not just hockey, but sports in general. Everything else is extra stupid crap. And as far as we can apply this to Don Cherry, I feel like you can apply just as much of what I just said to Leafs Twitter in general, to Leafs Facebook, to Leafs social media. There's so much stuff going on that isn't hockey. And to me, that's the most disturbing part. And now we've lost a guy. Some people are going to say we got rid of a guy that was so good at picking apart hockey and picking apart what made players good, finding guys that were more capable than people thought they were, finding diamonds in the rough, so to speak, picking little plays, those little moments of hockey. That's what we've lost. Even if you hate Don Cherry and you hate everything he stood for, which I don't think you can. If you like hockey, you can't hate everything Don Cherry stood for. But at the same time, I understand why people dislike some of the stuff he says. I'm not crazy about a lot of the things that he said in his life. I'm not going to be specific about anything. At the same time, this is a guy that like loved Canada, loved the sport, and wanted the best for hockey. Whether his vision matches what everyone else's vision should be, whatever. Anyways, I feel like I've stood on the edge of the fence long enough. I'm going to throw it over to you, James. What are your thoughts?
Well, we had our little debate this afternoon already about this. And, you know, my simple stance is I'm going to break it down simply the way that I've said it to my father-in-law, to my grandfather, to everyone that I've sat and watched Don Cherry and Hockey Night in Canada. And I'm going to go out right now and I'm going to say this. I've been a Don Cherry fan. I have Rock'em Sock'em's here. I have his books that he's written here. I've read them cover to cover numerous times. So before I say anything, I am not a Don Cherry hater. I am simply just saying what he said Saturday night about wearing a poppy is something that everyone should do. That is the message he was trying to convey. Unfortunately, so often in life, even when you are young, I teach this to my daughter all the time, it's not what you say, but how you say it. In this instance, it was what he said and not what he was trying to convey. So this little situation now that has exploded into a massive, almost worldwide phenomenon, because it is everywhere you look, no matter if it's ESPN, all the American news outlets, it's on CNN for crying out loud. This breaks down to a simple thing. Like I said to you, Doug, all Don Cherry had to do on Saturday night is we all know that he supports the troops. We all know that he goes over there and visits them. He goes to the graveyards. He's down at the legions. You know, he supports them. He's always putting up service members who have passed away, giving their life in the line of duty, whether it be a police officer, whether it be, you know, a soldier, whatever it is. He's always supported the troops. And you know that's Don Cherry's mantra. But what he was doing on Saturday night was trying to implore people that they should be wearing the poppy. But what he lost in that was using the words that he used. I'm not going to rehash them. I'm not going to say them again. They've been out and thrown out there and twisted and turned many different ways. I've seen online as well. And like you just said, the vitriol that there is of Twitter and Leafs Nation and news outlets, them just coming out and saying what they're saying now about this man, you know, that they used to laud a lot of the time. You know, for me, I get where he was coming from. You should wear a poppy. You should show your respect. That is where he should have left it. He should have said, every Canadian should wear a poppy. It shows the respect for the troops, the ones who gave their way, their life for our way of life now. That is all that should have been said, like he said, for so many years. But I don't know if it's because maybe in the summertime he felt the pressure from Sportsnet or whoever signs the check. Maybe he just felt this season he was going to go the extra little mile on everything that he drove home because he wanted his message to be heard. And he's not backing down from his message. Obviously, they gave him the choice. Either you can apologize or step down. And he chose to step down because he believed his message was the right message. Again, all I'm saying is Don Cherry could have phrased it differently and this conversation would not be had. Nobody would be saying anything at all. Everyone would have just said, yes, you should be wearing a poppy. That's the end of my diatribe on this. I mean, this is a show that we're going to talk about the Leafs and everything that's going on. Me and you had a battle about this. I want to take a moment, much like everyone else has, it seems, and apologize to you, Doug. I got a little bit heated just because I don't understand from my side of things, you know, Don Cherry's wording. That was the only thing I didn't get. He's always done so well with supporting everyone and being a part of everyone. And I want to take back, because there's so many people that are running things back and saying, you said this about that person, this about that person. One moment that gets replayed so much when the Leafs are in the playoffs the past 3 years, and Doug, you may remember this, is Nazem Kadri between Don Cherry, Colton Knorr, and Fraser McLaren. And Don Cherry is giving him that Doug Gilmore kiss, and everybody loves that. That's the grapes that I will remember. This situation, unfortunately, cost a man his job. It's a situation that he put himself in, and he knew, I guess, the consequences going forward if he did not choose to apologize. So from this, all I'm saying is we move forward, and Doug, I have to ask the obvious question that goes forward. Does Steve Dangle fill in beside Ron McLean?
Depends on what direction they're going to try and go with how they want the general tone of that. Like, I think, like, I wouldn't mind Dangle. The problem is Dangle's almost as polarizing as Don Cherry is, only the other way around. From what I can tell, a lot of the older hockey fans, older hockey crew aren't that crazy about him. I tried to get my dad into Dangle, and rather than disliking him, he was just confused about why he's popular. He's like, "Wow, this guy can't even skate. He can't even play hockey. Why do people listen to him?" was kind of my dad's response. My answer to that is, I don't know. Like, I like him because he's enthusiastic, and he seemed to have a good handle of the game and tends to give more rational responses, which someone who watches Dangle isn't going to say that. But to me, he's often a voice of reason. But I think, so if they're going to try and appeal to the younger crowd, they're going to go with Dangle. I don't know if it'll work out just because, like I said, he is so polarizing, but it wouldn't bother me. I do think another option would be Bob McCowan. I'm not going to say it's a one-to-one replacement for Don Cherry because that's ridiculous, but it would make sense to a certain degree. Whether he's interested in doing it, whether he still has contractual obligations to the Fan 590 or whatever, I don't know. He's welcome to come on our show whenever he wants. But I don't know that you're going to be able to replace Don Cherry. Like I said, that's one of the biggest losses out of all of this, is now we're going to have, like, just straight up, the intermissions, TSN, Sportsnet, CBC, none of them are that good. Not any of them. The only one that was decent was Don Cherry. And like I said, it comes down to how well he was able to pick apart hockey games, him or his crew, whoever, Ron McLean, whatever, whoever was responsible for finding those little clips that he seemed to just be able to tear apart and seem to be at the heart and soul of what made certain teams and certain players who they are. That's what we've lost. It'll be hard to replace that. Like, you know, I try to do a little bit of that, especially when we do our intermission shows, is I try to find the little things that not necessarily that other people aren't picking up on, but what the little consequences of those are, like those little moment to moment plays that unless you're out looking for them and watching guys. My one advice for people is how to pick up on that is pick a shift. Any shift, doesn't matter which one, and pick a player you're going to watch and who doesn't have the puck, and or just one player, and watch them the entire shift. Don't watch where the puck is. Don't watch the play. Pick a player and just watch them. This is what scouts do, and this is how you get a handle on the type of player a guy really is what does he do without the puck? What does he do for a duration of a shift? And that's how you pick up on a lot of the stuff that Don Cherry and a lot of the good scouts tend to pick up on. I just hope that whoever they bring in does that. And does true analysis of the game, actually talks about issues surrounding hockey, and gives their honest opinion about how to improve the game and stuff like that. That's what made Don Cherry good. That's what made that segment good. Or at least that was, in my opinion, anyways. That's what we try to do at intermission. It's hard. It's not an easy thing to do. It's easy to do once or twice. It's hard to do it every single Saturday. So, yeah, I don't know. Who do you think they'll replace him with?
I don't know. The running mantra or running name online right now is Brian Burke.
God, no.
Just because he's salty, old, and cantankerous, and, you know, be a grumbly grumble. But that's even before this happened, Doug, that was who people were saying is being groomed to replace Don Cherry anyways. So I actually never thought of Bob McCowan, so you threw something out there that actually really piqued my interest. He's another guy who's a straight shooter, tells it like it is. Everybody loved him. He just had a huge contract, and that's why Sportsnet decided to let him go along with a lot of other people. Maybe now with Don gone, maybe that is someone they reach out to. Maybe that bridge is burned and he won't go back. Much I'll echo you, Doug. He can come on the show anytime and speak about that. It'd be fun to hear about, even if we have the green room talk before the show and find out that stuff. It all stays in our vault when we hear these things, but I don't know, man. It's going to be different to tune into Coach's Corner, you know, and not see the guy you've seen there your entirety of your life.
They can't keep calling it that. They can't do that. That would be disrespectful. I don't even know. People are going to say, well, who cares, because he's racist and whatever. But to me, that's, you know, whether you like it, there's parts of this game that are just have Don Cherry is all up in. I'll give you an example. Calling the Carolina Hurricanes jerks. And like that's what we're losing. We're losing stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of people agreed and disagree with that. But at the end of the day, the Carolina Hurricanes have a whole theme around them being a jerks. It kind of reignited their post-game celebration. He brought a lot to this hockey game. I'll give you another huge example of something that Don Cherry brought to the hockey world. If you've ever seen the stop sign on the back of a youth hockey player's jersey, that's largely, I don't think it was his idea. I don't want to say that for certain, but I do know he pushed for it and pushed for it and pushed for it many, many years, trying to get kids to stop hitting from behind, particularly because for growing players, that can be a really, really bad situation. When you have young kids, some of them are big, some of them are small, and a hit from behind can have a lot more of a dangerous type of impact than on bigger kids, just because everybody, when you're bigger, tends to be, you know, you get to the NHL, everybody's around 6 feet. You know, there's a few short guys here and there.
How about advocating for no touch icing?
Yeah, exactly. There's lots and lots of stuff that this guy has done for hockey. To dismiss all of that because of some of the things he said, he was at his best when he was talking about hockey. Anyways, I don't want to. We could probably go on about all the stuff Don Cherry's done for hockey, and all the horrible things he said. You know, he talked about, I can't even count the number of times he picked on European players and stuff like that. So we could go on and on about that, but like you said before, this is a Leafs podcast. We're here to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. And holy crap, what a day for hockey. Let's jump right into it. Michael Hutchison got waived.
Well, let's jump into that just a minute, because we're going to go through the Chicago game first, and then we'll run through Hutch being, I guess, cast to the abyss, much like a Jonas Enroth a couple of seasons ago. So we'll jump into the first one there. You heard the clip coming into the show of basically Travis Dermott scoring against the Philadelphia Flyers. The theme of this weekend for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Doug, was simple and plain. It was, we don't care if we go down. We have enough skill to come back and tie it up and possibly win the game, a la what they did to the LA Kings. Obviously, we know on Saturday and Sunday evening they didn't do just that. I'm wondering how you felt about the Philly game as a whole, and then we'll get into the Chicago debacle in a moment. But for me, the Chicago or the Philadelphia game, it seemed like for whatever reason they just weren't there yet again to start the game. Common theme: first goal scored against, second goal scored against. It almost seemed like a rout was coming. I'm wondering what your feelings were on that game Saturday night and where your head was at when they went down yet again.
So unfortunately, I had that game spoiled for me. Although I did watch it. I threw it up on the TV while I was doing a bunch of stuff. But my takeaways before I even watched the game, and I think it's ridiculous just how on the nose this is the Leafs were not physical enough. The Leafs didn't shoot the puck enough. The Stars didn't get, quote-unquote, enough ice time to shut Twitter critics up. The shootout's stupid. And, of course, Don Cherry said something to upset a bunch of people. That was going to be my takeaways from the game. That was the tweet that I sent out. I believe it was Sunday morning, Sunday early afternoon, right before I watched the game. What I just said, that sums up the game. And the fact that I was able to do that without actually watching the game, like there's something wrong with this hockey team. Like, if I can pick apart why we lost the game without even having seen it, I don't even know what, mm-hmm. where do I even go from there? Like, what analysis is there to do? The problems are so glaringly obvious at this point. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast, but I've been saying it to people, I don't know, probably for a week. They have to get, this is inflammatory. This is off the cuff a little bit, except for the fact that I've been saying it for a week. I think they have to get rid of one of the Stars. And not because I think we will be a better hockey team without one of them, but I think that something needs to be done to put the fear of, I guess, Dubas in them. Waving Hutchison is not the answer to that. To me, what you have to do is you trade William Nylander, Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, someone like that. And you don't do it because you're going to be a better hockey team having gotten rid of them. You do it because you're going to play like a better hockey team having gotten rid of one of them. That's it. Not because we're getting more skill. We're not going to be able to trade any of those guys and get someone more skilled than what we got, most likely. Even if we trade one of them for like a pair of D-men, you know, a more of a logic move in terms of a rebalancing of the skill, maybe shedding some cap room. To me, that's what this is leading towards. Maybe we're not quite there yet, but they're certainly running out of shields to break. I'd say Hutchison is the first one. The next one's going to be Mike Babcock.
Well, here's my biggest problem with the game Saturday night, and much to what you're saying. If you go back and you look at what I was tweeting from the offside account on Saturday night, the whole thing was just shoot the puck. They had so many opportunities, so many chances. There were many. I don't understand. They had clear lanes that they had created that probably would have ended up in goals. Nylander, I know, for one. Tavares was another. You look at these and you're just like, what is going on here? You have the opportunity to shoot the freaking puck. You have a guy on the power play standing in front of the net ready to bang that puck in, and you're not doing anything. Shoot it. Jesus Christ, just shoot the puck. Put it on the net.
Put it on the net. Put some effort in, too, on top of that. Don't wait until you have to put effort in. Just friggin' do it. My goodness.
Oh, that's another thing. The full 60. If these guys, Doug, I've said this to you many times, if these guys played a full 60, they would be otherworldly.
I think we need to...
They would be untouchable.
We need to have a recording of us saying this, and then just play the recording every time it happens, because... It's absurd. Like, I'm at a point now where I don't want to blame Babcock. I don't blame Babcock. I blame every friggin' player. I blame Shanahan. I blame Dubas. This has gone from being a little small issue to what the hell is wrong with this organization? Like, this is ridiculous. We've never had this much skill, this much young talent on one hockey team since I've been alive that I can recall. Even the Gilmore days, we have not had this solid of a hockey team, and we're blowing it. People are like, oh, well, you know, they're still in a playoff spot, which is true. I think there's like, it's firmly cemented in a playoff spot, actually. They're not even close to, like, losing that. We still have Freddie Anderson. Freddie Anderson is arguably the only player that's living up to what we are expect. Here's the other thing is these are not absurd pie in the sky expectations for this hockey team. These are very, very fair. If they were performed the same way they did last year, but just, killing me to talk about. It's so frustrating when all I want to do is watch hockey and entertained. I've said it before. I would be happy watching a men's league hockey team stink the joint out, but work their rear ends off more than I want to watch a bunch of millionaires not put effort in. And that's what this is turning into. This is turning into Phil Kessel era crap. And if that's the way this is going to go, then we've taken one step forward and two step back, as far as I'm concerned. We're still better off than we were in the Kessel days, just because we're not reliant on like two players, three players. We have depth, but the depth isn't performing. I shouldn't be looking up and seeing Gauthier on the ice because his line's working the hardest. Like fourth line, yeah, your job is to go out there and work the hardest, but not every single shift. Every single time they go on the ice, every time we have a game, they're the hardest working line. Them and the Kerfoot line. It's stupid. Yep. It's stupid.
The only problem is for those guys, unfortunately, they're not scoring. They're putting the effort in, but not getting results. And
they're not good enough. That's why they're third and fourth liners. Straight up. That's what it is.
Well,
sorry. Go on.
We'll move on from the city of brotherly love, and we'll head on to into the windy city of Chicago.
But what am I going
to
say different? What are we going to say different about that? It's the same thing over again.
It's the same thing over again. The only thing that I will say is the team did battle back, and I know again it was late. I know again it was in the third period when they finally decided to wake up. And by the way, playing Austin Matthews 21 minutes and some odd seconds, and then having Babcock saying I played him too much. You know what? Once in a blue moon, why not? Especially if he's going to put on four assists. I mean, I know it all came at the end of the game in the third period. Guys, I understand that. Same diatribe we just went through with the last game. I understand. It's fine. But here's the thing. If the Leafs get one save on that fifth goal by Hutchinson, and I'm not saying the whole thing was on Hutchinson because there was a lot of positional problems, and Tavares himself singled himself out on one of the goals when it came to Mr. Patrick Kane. But what I'm saying is when you need a big save from your goaltender, that was the moment. That was the moment. You don't need a whole bunch of, you know, Freddie Anderson type saves, Dougs. You've said that before, but you need at least one. And that was the moment when the Leafs were coming on and were down one goal. They needed the frickin' save. That's the one where you need to stop that puck, and things would have been different, I feel. Because obviously Johnsson scored with, what, 28 seconds or 18 seconds left, whatever it was. So if they get that one frickin' save, and that's what the backup goalie is there, and that's what you say all the time, the backup goalie is there not to be Freddie Anderson, because he's not. But he is there to at least hold the fort, and in that moment the Leafs needed him to hold the fort, and he could not do so. And he has not been able to do so this season. I don't care what anyone says. He is, what, 0-4-1 this season. And yes, I know it's all on back-to-backs. But you need to at least pick up a victory. You at least need to give your team a chance to make a freaking save. But like you just said, you know, the Leafs are running out of shields. And I'm going to read this little tweet from Bob McKenzie. It's obviously easier to wave Hutchinson and roll the dice with Kaskisuo than it is to wave the five skaters on the ice for Patrick Kane's 3-1 goal last night, where he and the Hawks walked in from center ice, face-off, and never got touched by a single Leaf defender. So obviously, Doug, you're not the only one seeing it. Obviously, I'm not the only one seeing it. But here's the thing. Like you just said, the first shield is broken, but I will say one thing. The Leafs needed a save in that instance, and that was his job. to keep them in the game, and he didn't make that save. And I feel like that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Wow. If he made that save and the Leafs were able to salvage a point, there may have been something different happening today.
The flip side of that, shields are meant to be broken. So sending Hutchison down, like I said, the next step after that, I don't see at this point, the next time we throw a defender in a sec backup goalie in net, and if we have the exact same issue with a different backup goalie, with the guys just not showing up for him, there's only one shield left, which is Mike Babcock. And at that point,
well, we're gonna see it this week. We're going to see it this week because they play Friday, Saturday yet again.
So
they play Boston, and I don't remember who, but they play Friday, Saturday, Doug.
I mean, so if that doesn't work out, then you're thinking, okay, are we going to get rid of Kaskisuo? Well, who do we even have after Kaskisuo? I can't remember right now.
We have Mr. Joe Wool down in the minors. We have Ian Scott, which I think he's down in junior. Yeah,
neither of those guys are going to be better off than Kaskisuo or Hutchison. I'm sorry. I wish they wouldn't. Maybe they have some latent talent that they're not showing, but the way goaltending, you don't have Wool superstar goalies. You don't have superstar goalies coming out of nowhere, though. They have to be developed.
No, you're right. You're right. And Ian Scott and Joseph Wool are developing, and that's, I've seen a lot of people throw their names out, if you look, I tweeted it out. I said, you need to let these guys develop. Don't bring them up. Don't put them in. Don't let them get shelled. Because then you have a Luke Shen situation where a guy is getting drilled way too early when he shouldn't be. And you don't know what you do to his development. And you never know. Maybe this guy steps in and he's all worldly. But at the same time, when Carter Hart was getting shelled last year, you know that's the reason why the Philadelphia Flyers kept him down. Even though their GM got fired, he was shielding him because the team wasn't ready to have him as a goaltender, even though he is the heir apparent to be the goaltender in Philly for the future. I don't think he was ready, and that's why they shielded him, much like the Leafs should do with Wool and Ian Scott. Right now, what I think is going to happen is they're going to play Kaskisuo. Maybe Hutchison gets his confidence back up, but what they're going to do is what they did the last time this happened when they jet sent Enroth out. Is they're going to wait for someone to hit the wire, and they're going to pick them up, much like they did with Curtis McElhinney, and hope they yet again catch lightning in a bottle, which is a piss-poor way to manage your roster. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit that is a piss-poor way to manage your roster, hoping you pick up a goaltender off waivers to save your season.
What we have is two paths forward for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Path A, they start playing good. And Kaskisuo steps in as backup goalie, and he does just slightly better than Hutchison did. That's path A, and all of a sudden the Leafs start playing good again, and they play the way they're capable of. Path B, they don't do that. They fire Mike Babcock, and then begins the dismantling of this hockey team, at least partially. Those are the only two ways forward that I see. If they're going to live up to the Shanna plan, which obviously doesn't even exist anymore at this point. We're so far off of whatever that might have been. If you're going to stick to the ideal of it, at least, then you have to rebuild after that, which means you're going to be getting rid of guys like Marner and Nylander, maybe a Matthews, maybe chuck your defensive core out as well. You have to do that because if you're going to stick to that principle of we are not accepting substandard play from above standard players, you have to do that. You don't have a choice. So the best case scenario for that is you lose Babcock, you lose one or two of these great players. We're not going to be better off. That's not what anybody wants to happen. So the fact that what I'm saying is that because I know that that's not what the Leafs want. Everybody in the NHL knows that's not what the Leafs want. Anything we get for those guys that we are going to get rid of, we're not going to get value for those guys because they're going to know that at that point the Leafs have. So this could potentially be the beginning of of another stretch of the Leafs not winning games, not winning hockey games, not performing, maybe not even making the playoffs. Although I can't even with, I can't see them getting rid of Matthews. I can't see them getting rid of Tavares. You know, I could sort of see them getting rid of Matthews. That's much more likely than Tavares. To me, the real core of this team now is John Tavares, Zach Hyman. You know, he hasn't been here yet this season. Morgan Riley, Travis Dermott, Freddie Anderson. Those are the core players now. Guys, to me, guys like Marner and Matthews and Nylander, they're now on the bubble. Even though Marner is performing at a similar clip to last year, he's not. They're none of them are putting in the effort that we need in the situations we need them to put that effort forth. Guys turning away from hits. Guys not finishing their checks. Guys caught puck watching, fishing for pucks over and over and over again. Minor league, single A level, house league level mistakes that are being made. They're not kids anymore. This is what some of them, it's like Morgan Riley, I think it's his like sixth season in the NHL, something like that, fifth or sixth. Yep. Like it's none of that's acceptable anymore. We're past that point. I wish we weren't. I wish we had another year for these guys to quote unquote develop. That's so far past. I don't know, man.
Hang on. I'm gonna pump the brakes on your hot take express here, because you have a train that is on the rails. This is what I've been
saying. This is what I've been saying for like 2 weeks to everybody. Is like this is the feeling that I'm getting from this hockey team. I don't want to think these things. I want Mitch Marner to go out and score 110 points. I was his biggest supporter, even when everybody was like ragging on about how much money it was going to cost us. I was like, pay him so he'll play good. That was my logic. And I still think he's going to be one of the best players in the NHL within the next 2 or 3 years, if he's not that already. I still think that. I still think that Austin Matthews is an excellent, excellent hockey player. You're talking about a 40-plus goal scorer. I still think that Morgan Riley is solid.
Okay, give me 1 sec here. I'm gonna cut you off for 1 second here, because I want to get this in, okay? Like I said, you're talking about these guys, and you're talking about this, you know, they're on the bubble. I'm going to go back, and I implore anyone who hasn't heard it yet to go listen to the Craig Button episode, only because I was, much like you, Doug, ripping these guys to shreds and tearing them down and saying they're not giving the effort, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. Here's the problem with everything. Remember when the Leafs, we started together doing this show pretty soon after the Leafs lost to the Washington Capitals and made the playoffs for the first time. And, you know, we were excited, but we knew the expectations for this team were going to be exponential going forward. They went out and got Patty Marleau. You know, they've done things to speed up the process. Here's what Craig Button said, and I'm going to do it in a nutshell, and I won't do it any service, so please go listen to it. Craig Button said that these guys here are all still young. They are all indeed still developing. They're in their early 20s, most of them just hitting the word 20. They are learning the NHL. They are growing. They are getting bigger. They are getting stronger, smarter, whatever you want to call it. They are learning to be a cohesive unit. This year, they do not look good. No, they do not. I understand that. But if you go back and you look at Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, when they signed their big money deals coming into that year, they looked like crap. Now they are all worldly players playing for the world-beating Calgary Flames, who we all know are a powerhouse in the West and won their division last year. The reason why these guys are on such a hyper-focused microscope, as Craig Button was saying, is you had a guy like John Tavares get signed, and that jump-started so many people's expectations to the next level when these guys still hadn't come out of their entry-level deals yet. You have to remember, this is their first year out of their entry-level deals, playing with big money, playing with way larger expectations than playing for, you know, whatever their entry-level deal was plus bonuses. So this here is now guys playing with the money they got and learning to be a superstar in this league and now having those expectations heaped upon them to continue to do those things. So if we did not sign John Tavares, if we did not bring in Patty Marleau, which I'm glad we did bring both of them in, to be honest, but if we didn't bring those in, the expectations wouldn't be as high and we'd still be saying, you know what, this is whatever, year five of the five where we get these guys to get going and get rolling and get smarter. So these guys are still developing, they are still growing, and Craig Button opened my eyes to that. You know, you want to rip these guys to shreds, but then you realize, geez, what's Matthews, 21, 22? What's Marner, 22? What's Nylander, 24? You know, 23? You know, they're in NHL lingo, they're still babies. You know, they haven't been there for long enough. They haven't taken the bumps and the bruises. They haven't, you know, been through all situations. You know, they haven't, all these things. And that's what he opened my eyes to. And, you know, I want these guys to play well. I want them to do good. But when he brought up the Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau thing, where they came into their first year of their big contracts and they pretty much, for all collective purposes, stunk the joint out. You know, then you look at it, okay, is this something that happens? And maybe it does, and maybe it affects them. Who knows? I'm just saying, maybe, just maybe, this group is good enough to get it done, but there's enough outlying circumstances that we are not looking at of why they're doing what they're doing or why they are what they are. I don't know. But also, as fans, our expectations were expedited because of who we signed and what we brought in. And this year we did it again by flipping Nazem Kadri for Tyson Barry to shore up the right side, which we'll get to Barry in a couple moments. But another piece was brought in, which got everybody more excited and thinking we're going to take the next step. And of course, naturally, when you don't take that next step, everybody looks at it as an instant failure, instant problem. And looking at any outlying issues of why there might be problems or why there might be issues are not there. I want to do two things before I let you rebuttal. Morgan Riley is not 100%, has been missing a lot of practices and still is having minutes driven down his throat, and he's playing each and all of them, but he's not practicing most of the time with the team. And here's the sky is not falling thing. The Leafs have gotten points in four of the five last games, and we're sitting here right now, and I'm doing the same because I'm frustrated as all hell watching you guys only play in the third. We're still sitting here right now saying this team is needing to do better, improve, which they do, and we're saying they're crap. But if you went to any other fan base who had a team and you said, hey, your team just got points in four of their five last games, they would be ecstatic. So I don't know. Maybe our expectations are just so heightened for what we signed and what we've done. I don't know. But Doug, I'll push her back over to you.
My expectations, all right, I'm not going to talk about what Leafs Nation's expectation is because I'm so over the... I already said it earlier this episode. I'm over how social media is just treating hockey these days. It makes it worse, not better. But my expectations are to see improvement and progression. And instead, for the past season and a half, two seasons, I've seen regression and a lack of improvement. All these guys are 2 years older than when we had that first, you know, semi-serious run. They're not better. They're not 2 years better. They're not, I wouldn't even say that they're one season better. In several of their cases, I'd say that they're worse. Mitch Marner is capable of more. Like, all these guys are underperforming, and underperformance turns into a habit. And the fact that they're young, as you said, to me, that feeds back into, that makes it even more serious of an issue, because you can't, you learn habits like that when you're playing the way they are that you can't unlearn. They become ingrained in you. So this is not a...
Is that not the onus on the coach, though, to get those habits out?
So let me finish. So this is not the way this team has to be developed. Something has to change, which goes back to my Shields comment. Your next Shield is Mike Babcock. And as I also said, Shields are meant to be broken. So Babcock's going to shield this team, try and preserve this hockey team, this dynamic of players. He's going to have to be broken, or he's going to have to make this team into something that doesn't need to have Shields broken for it. And personally, I just don't see that happening. I don't see, if we were seeing that, we would be seeing a steady improvement. We'd be steadily seeing things change and get better. Maybe Babcock is trying his hardest to affect those changes, and they're just not taking. But at the end of the day, Shields are meant to be broken, and ultimately there's none left other than Babcock at this point. What are you going to do? You're going to trade away half your defensemen? You're going to, like, they could in theory trade, like, you know, a Nylander, a Marner, a something like that. Although now Marner's injured, that doesn't seem very often. They could do something like that before they get rid of Babcock, but I don't see them doing it. In fact, I'd say most analysts you ask would say that they're more likely to get rid of Babcock than they are any of their star players. And yet that's, to me, that's what needs to happen, is to put the fear of God or the fear of Dubas back into these guys. So, yeah.
Well, something does need to happen. And you know what? I do believe the Shield of Babcock will be the next one to break. I don't know who you bring in or what you do beyond that point, but it does seem to be maybe like you said before, and I don't know if it was you or someone else, I do believe it was you, who said Babcock has gotten them this far. Maybe it's someone else who needs to take them the rest of the way. And
I think you said that.
Maybe. Okay, maybe it was me. I just remember hearing it somewhere, so yeah. Maybe I like hearing myself talk. But anyways, I think someone does need to carry them the rest of the way, and I'm going to rehash what I said then if it was me. If this team is being figured out, it's embarrassing. I'm watching the game on Saturday night when the Philadelphia Flyers have players sitting exactly where you're going to drop back that puck on the power play because they know how slow you move it through. Maybe your power play setup is not what it needs to be to utilize the speed in the group that you have. So maybe you need to change it up. I don't know. I'm not a coach. I don't coach. But obviously, if people can see what is happening, then obviously you need to change things up. Now, here goes the next thing. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to be on the Hot Take Express right with you. Maybe we need to trade Tyson Barrie. And why do I say that? Maybe we need to get another minute-munching shutdown D instead of the guy who can fly the puck up. Because for whatever reason, right now, Tyson Barrie does not look like he's a fit on this squad. He is another player of many of the ilk that we have, like a Travis Dermott, Morgan Rielly, Rasmus Sandin, Timothy Liljegren, who got knocked out on the weekend. And I'm just wondering, do you trade him to add a stay-at-home defenseman, or do you give him a chance to play on this failing power play and change it up while Marner is gone with the power play and have a Matthews, Willie, Mickey, Morgan, Barrie, and just have soup down low to crash and bang? Wondering what you need to do. You know what I mean? Like, that's a situation where I think you need to change it up. You need to do something. And why not? And my nan always said this, you know, and I'm going to take a moment. It's been a little bit tough for me. My nan did pass away. She's like my mother. So, you know, things have been a little bit difficult to do episodes of Offside and keep everything going the way it is. Everybody's sad. Everybody's this. Everybody's sad. But as my nan used to say, you know, sometimes you spread out what you have instead of keeping it all together in one thing, because then it gives people more to think about. And I mean, obviously, if you're looking at a lineup of Matthews, Willie, Mikheyev, Morgan, and Tyson Barrie, that's pretty solid. Then you have another group of Kapanen, Tavares, Kerfoot, Janssen, and Muzzin blasting that slap shot. I mean, what does it hurt at this point? If everybody's figuring out what you're doing, what does it hurt to change it up a little bit? And I mean, you have Ilya Mikheyev, who's now gone cold soup, and he was right there with everybody, you know, in the rookie scoring, he was up there. So, I mean, other than Matthews and Willie being on fire, I think you need to figure out something with this offense to not only get your secondary scoring going, but get this lifeless power play to life. And if it takes breaking up the band, then do it. I mean, don't worry about hurt feelings.
The power play underperforming, I think, is just evidence that maybe getting rid of the coach isn't the best way to go, simply because we have one of the best power play coaches there is, and it hasn't helped. That's this season so far in a nutshell. You know, the equivalent of that, I can't even think. That'd be like if you go out and you get Aroldis Chapman and you give him to Pete Walker and he somehow pitches worse in baseball. I can't even think of a good analogy. That's like adding onion to a soup and somehow it has less flavor afterwards. Like, speaking of soup, what is up with that? Back to Barrie for a second. I don't think the solution is to get rid of Barrie. He's fine. Again, remember I had my speech about how the defensemen were fine. Maybe some of them aren't so fine anymore. Barrie definitely is, though. That's the way I'm looking at it. I don't mind Barrie. To me, I think you got to give him a shot. You know, back in the old day, you played your best defenseman with each other, and to me, he might be the next best defenseman after Morgan Rielly. Why not stick him and Rielly together, just to see, like you said, switch it up. One thing I will say that you mentioned about the drop pass is stuff like that gets ingrained in you as a player. These guys have been under Babcock for 4 years. It's something they've been doing for 4 years. It's hard to just drop that habit, especially when you like you fall back when you're especially when you're struggling in a hockey game like the Leafs do all the time. Is you fall back into things that you're comfortable doing, and as bad as that is, it's better than some of the other stuff I saw them do, like the cross ice passes in our own zone. Now that's different from a drop pass, but it's a hell of a lot worse. So,
yep.
What do you do? Like, is a coaching change really gonna? How much is a coaching change gonna affect that? I don't know. Babcock is a solid coach. Like he is. We've been in the playoffs every year except one, which we probably intentionally tanked.
Yeah. Listen, I understand what you're saying. I'm just, it's eventually gonna be the shield breaking, like you keep saying. Yeah. And it's gonna be Babcock, and we're gonna see what happens beyond that point. But let's keep this show rolling. Now, much like the Leafs power play is not, we can move on and just be better ourselves. A player that I want to talk about right quick, Muzzin. I think he is the Leafs' second best defenseman, showing no fear, blocking shots, yes. Throwing hits.
Yeah.
He just goes about his job so effortlessly, you don't even think about him. He just does what he needs to do. He's a player, much like the other guys I'm going to talk about in a moment, the Leafs should go out and extend. I think he is what the Leafs need going forward.
Yeah.
We have a lot of young puck-moving defensemen. We do not need to sign Tyson Barrie, but I do think we need to sign Jake Muzzin.
Yeah.
He is a guy that we need to lock down.
Yes. No, I'll agree. You know what? I'll walk back what I said about Barrie being the second best defenseman. I think that Barrie would fit Morgan Rielly's style of play a little bit better. But Muzzin might too. Like, but it just goes back to what I said. Why not try these guys together? Put your best defensive pairing together. Especially if you're going to be playing them half the game anyways, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree with you. The other thing I was going to say about guys we should lock up, I've been super impressed, and I've been beating this guy's drum all season long. I love Justin Hall. I want to go back to what you were saying earlier about take a shift and focus on a player. You should focus on Justin Hall. He is a guy who is giving maximum effort in the opportunities he is getting. And all season long, you talked about improvement on guys. This is one guy that I have seen improve. I have seen him get his stick in the lanes more, him taking the body more, him driving guys wide of the net, just doing those little things that don't show up on a score sheet, but end up having an impact on the game. And he is turning himself into an NHL player, and one hell of an NHL player, if you ask me. He's a guy I think the Leafs should lock up now before the number goes up, because I do believe, I don't know if he's an RFA or UFA at the end of the season. Same thing with Travis Dermott. I know he's an RFA, guys, but he's still a guy that I think you should lock up. The goal on Saturday night against Philly and the skating, the poise with the puck, the confidence he has, those are things that you want. And that's what I was just saying about not signing Barrie, but signing Muzzin, is because we have guys like Travis Dermott, and he can fly with that puck, Doug. And the goal he scored Saturday night, we have it in the intro for a reason. That excited me, man. I was excited to see Travis Dermott back because the emotion he conveys when he scores. And I want them to lock these two guys up because these are guys that are showing progression. I know Travis Dermott just got back, but he's a player that we've watched, be that tweener coming up at the end of the season and getting games. And then last year, getting his first full dose. And now this season, you see the confidence is there even more. I think there's a high ceiling on both these players. I know Hall is a little bit older. I think he's 26 or 27. But maybe he was a late bloomer. And maybe he is that bottom pair guy that we've been craving that just does it right. And you don't need to worry about him. I don't know, Doug. What do you think?
About Hall?
About Hall, yeah. About Hall and Dermott. Do you think we should lock him up or what?
I'm not gonna say crazy, but I'm not as sold on Hall as you seem to be. Dermott, he's young enough that he deserves more of a chance. Lock him up. Why not Dermott? You need defensemen. It's hard to get decent defensemen, and a guy like that's probably gonna be improving. Probably. It just goes back to what I was saying about earlier about these guys not showing improvement. I don't see that big of a step up from Hall. Hall's best game is still his first game last season, right? Like, he hasn't played better than that or even equal to that since. So you know he's capable of more, and he isn't doing it, and I don't see a steady progression from him. I do see a slight progression, a slight steady progression from Dermott. He may, in fact, be one of, like, you know, three or four guys on the team that can has actually shown some sort of improvement in progression. Not as drastic as you'd want, but it's there. But I don't see that from Hall. I don't know.
I implore you to just focus in on him and watch his play. Like I said, it's nothing fancy. But last year, the guy was a healthy scratch for 72 games, you know, because he didn't get into the lineup. And now this year, he hasn't been taking out of the lineup. I mean, he's not going to score the goals like he did last year, where he had two games where he scored back-to-back goals, and it was the hottest ticket in Leafs land for a couple days. You know, he's not a goal scorer. He got lucky with those two goals, I think. He's that prototypical bottom-pairing guy that does things quietly and does things right, and I think that's just what it is, and I think he's sold his own stock up this year, and he's done well.
I think the telling thing will be to go back and, if possible, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do it, is watch a few of his shifts from those games and compare that to how he's playing now. I'm sure it's something that he's doing and that the coaches are doing, or if they haven't already, why aren't they? Yeah, that's to me. But I get the feeling that you're just not going to see the same player in those two instances. He looked like you said, he looked gung ho, like he was going to take over the world last year, and I'm not seeing that. And you know, maybe that's pent up from being scratched for 72 games or whatever, and it's just pent up energy or whatever. And everybody's at the end of a season. He was fresh, but I don't buy it. I think that he has a latent skill that he's not using and not developing. And like I said, when you're young and you're finding you're learning ways to not use your skill, it's not good. So, yeah, I'm gonna leave it at that. Well, I'm not giving up on him. I'm just not sold on him yet. That's what I'll say.
We'll see. Like I said, I'd say hone in on him. Just take a check. You know, and before I go and anoint these guys, most times I go and look and just to make sure that I'm not crazy, because there's been times where I've called out Kasperi Kapanen for giving away the puck too much. And I've had, you know, guys like Justin Bourne or Ian Tulloch, you know, jump and say, hey, look at this, look at that. And, you know, and just check out what he's actually doing during the game. And it's like, all right. And, you know, so I look around and a lot of people who I put stock in looking at for stats or looking at for, you know, progression in players like Mark Seidel and stuff like that. I've seen people and asked people, you know, is this a real thing? And a lot of people seen just like they said, the small things, nothing flashy, just small things like boxing guys out properly. And he's had a little bit of a progression in all of those things. So hopefully it is something that keeps growing and maybe he can grow on you. And by the end of the season, he'll be your beautiful rose. I don't know. But with that, we will transition into the three stars and the warrior. Doug, you go ahead and take the floor, my friend.
Well, I don't have three stars, James. I have one star. And I think it's pretty obvious who that's going to be. It's going to be Freddie Anderson. I don't feel like anybody else on this hockey team has earned a star. Some people might be angry at that and say, oh, you should give Nylander a star because he has so many. I think he has something like 7 or 8 points, goals or assists on our last 10 goals or something like ridiculous like that. But to me, it's because he's scoring by default. Like, I think the only reason he's scoring all those goals is because other guys aren't. And he's had extra ice time because Marner isn't around and that stuff. And I just don't see that. I don't see shift-to-shift effort, consistent shift-to-shift effort from anybody to the point where I want to give them a star, except for Freddie Anderson. So Freddie Anderson is going to be my one and only star this week. What about you?
Well, I won't echo the one star, but I will say that Freddie Anderson does earn a star of mine. I'll get to him in just a moment. For me, I will say one of the stars goes to the Leafs medical staff. And Doug, you know I do this all the time. I go off the board with my stars. I don't just go for players.
Weren't we going to ban this?
Mitch, I know, but this is a good one. I think you'll join on me with this one. On Saturday night when Mitch Marner hurt his ankle, he obviously wanted to stay in the game. And you can see, much to his chagrin, on many of the replays, snapping off his helmet and storming down the tunnel. Obviously, the Leafs held him out, and it was the right decision, as obviously we now know. Mitch Marner is now out for minimum a month, and we haven't even brought that up on this show yet, really. But anyways, he's out for minimum a month. I think the Leafs medical staff deserve the third star for protecting a player from himself. More often than not, they don't do that. They let the guy jump back on the ice, and then things end up being worse than they could be. So tip of the cap to them, because obviously you can see Marner was not happy. Unlike you, I am going to give a star to Austin Matthews. Not for effort-wise, but just for point-wise. 9 points this week. Good guy. I think he got second star of the week from the NHL. So, you know, he's putting the points up. Maybe he can do it, you know, in the first or second period. Maybe get the goal first so the Leafs can play with a lead, not from behind. But I'm not going to criticize my second star any further. And my first star, yes, Doug, is Frederik Andersen. Without this guy, I don't think we'd be winning as much games as we have this season. He is the absolute superstar of this squad. And just Austin Matthews skating over to him, I think it was the LA game, and calling him an effing beast. That is just encapsulating exactly what he is and why he's the first star. So Freddie Andersen, tip of the cap for me and Doug, you are our first star. Next thing we jump into is our Warrior of the Week. Doug, who's your Warrior?
You're going to be my Warrior of the Week, James. I know you've had a rough go of it the past little while. It's always tough when you lose a loved one like you have. So the fact that you kept it going last week, you covered for me after I was off fighting robots and was just dead exhausted, and you carried the episode by yourself and just everything else that you do, you prepped most of this episode. So James, you're going to get my Warrior of the Week. How about that?
I was not expecting that. A little bit teary-eyed. it's been a lot. And we said goodbye Thursday. I walked out of a funeral parlor with my nan there for the last time seeing her. You know, it's crazy because, like I said, she's like my mom. So you don't know what to do. She's the person you always turn to when things like this happen. And now that voice isn't there. And it just feels like a very large void. So I'm not going to do my Warrior because I got tears in my eyes, Doug. I want to thank you for that. It meant a lot to me, so I appreciate that.
No problem, buddy. You've more than earned it. Unfortunately, I don't have any sort of prize to give you. normally, we give these away to millionaires, so there's nothing we can give them anyways. So you're going to get a fat load of nothing from me, but you can check out some of the Warrior equipment that the OGHL players wear and, you know, maybe buy yourself a pair of gloves or something. I don't know. They say Warrior on them.
That's the truth. Well, you know, speaking of the OJ, we're going to touch on them right now. You have some teams that you work with, and we're going to give shout-outs to some teams as well towards the end. This is a quick segment, guys. We're going to try to work the OJ back into this. I know we're long-winded this week, but there's a lot that was said at the beginning of the episode. But the OJ, I mean, we do a little bit of work with the Royals. Doug, you work for the Junior Canadians and the Toronto Patriots. Notice, Doug, I did not use a word in there that you hate with the Patriots.
Thank you.
So, but anyways, I'm gonna start with the Royals, my friend. The Royals seem to be having a hard season, 9-10-3. For you, what needs to improve with the squad to turn around? Is it all on the goaltending, or is there more layers to this onion than just that?
What I'll say about the Markham Royals is there's lots of skill there. It exists. They've got an excellent character captain and a guy named Dominic Del Civita, who's coming out of that, the Newmarket squad that turned into Milton. Milton didn't retain hardly anybody out of the Newmarket squad. The players are scattered across the Ontario Junior Hockey League and a few other leagues. But one thing you'll notice is I think there's four of them now that have been named captains of their respective team. The latest was Adrian Neighbors. I want to say in Collingwood. I'm going off memory there. I'm sorry, but they're everywhere and they make huge impacts. The Patriots. I can't remember. They're everywhere. That's what I mean. Is to me, it's a little. It's really like, it's jarring to see them over and over and over again across the league because, like, you know, it was a team that I announced and had a good relationship with. So to see them all turning up over the league, you know, that just speaks. And the fact that they end up in leadership roles so often just speaks to the effort that, that these guys show. But speaking more broadly, I think the biggest issue with the Royals is they don't have size. It's a little bit tough. You can only play around that so hard. So last year we saw the Royals rely on their offense, and it worked out for them for the most part. Like, you know, they made a solid run right through the North Division. They got the banner and stuff. They were a good hockey team, and that drives them, their ability to score. And this year they seem to be struggling to stop the other team scoring as much. They don't have Devin Maie. He left a bigger gap than I think any one of us would have predicted. Just having even just one nice big mean guy that can go out and crash and bash guys makes such a big difference. And they just don't seem to have that monster of a physical player this year. So to me, that's the biggest thing. Should they be capable of playing without a Maie? Yes, they should. There's enough skill there. It is still early in the season. The thing with junior players, and I'm probably going to end up saying this again, is they're a bit unpredictable. Like, you can't really, it's really tough to gauge the way they're going to go. You know, you can have a string of four or five bad games. You know, that can be tied into guys having midterms or exams or whatever. And that some teams that affects more than others. You know, if you have a group of guys that are really gifted academically, then it makes it easier. Or contrarily, you have guys that are gifted academically because they put so much effort into school, and that hurts them. So, at least in terms of focusing on hockey. There's so much that goes on with young players that we don't see at an NHL level. And I just think that's a little bit of what it is. I'm not as concerned. Maybe I should be more concerned. But there's lots of time left, and Mike Gilotti, every year seems to pull a few players out of the hat that help turn things around. He's already made a few moves here and there, and we're kind of still waiting to see those come to fruition and how they're going to affect this hockey team. I think they just picked up a new player last week or the week before. So this team's still growing and changing, and with junior hockey, that tends to happen more rather than less. So I'm not worried about the Royals yet. I'll say that 9-10-3, you could be doing a lot worse.
No, definitely. Well, I just want to make sure that you knew they were going to be on the right track eventually, and it seems like you have the confidence that this team can and will get her going. So we will keep watching. This will be something we do each and every week on the Royals. And the next team is the Junior Canadians, and they seem to be doing really well this season. 15-4, 2-2, seems to be a strong line to success. What is pushing them to do so well, and what are the key factors here for the Junior Canadians, Doug?
So it's impossible for me to talk about the Junior Canadians without talking about Ryan Teverberg. This is a guy that's already on NHL draft watch lists. He's 17 years old, and he had 30 points going into last night's hockey game. I'm trying to remember if he got any points yesterday. I can't recall off the top of my head. 30 points. They're not even 30. This is a guy that's more than a point per game. He has 15 and half. It's split right down the middle. 15 goals, 15 assists. This is a kid that just scores when he decides to. Having that on your team, that's huge, because when you have a guy that can just all of a sudden just fire up the ice and put the puck in the back of the net, almost at will, that turns games around. And I think you see, if you go back through the Junior Canadians record, you'll see a lot of games where they flipped the biscuit, so to speak, games where they came from behind and got the victory. And on top of that, they have, again, going back to that Newmarket team, they have Claudio DeGasperis. This is he's a little on the small side. I think he's 5'9", 5'10", about 180 pounds. But for a 20-year-old, that's, you know, they have character guys on their team. It's a team that is bought into playing for themselves. You know, at the beginning of the year, it seemed like a bit of a concern. There's guys that have played under Jeff Angelides, who went off and coached the Milton Menace this year as their assistant coach. There's guys that have played under him for, like, you know, 2, 3, maybe even 4 years, and he's gone. And there, it took, at the beginning of the year, it looked like they hadn't quite bought in. And now it just seems like every game they play, there's a little bit more and more faith in that coaching staff that's there. And just that steady improvement that we're not seeing from the Leafs, we seem to be seeing from the Junior Canadians, at least in their ability to gel. They have excellent hockey players all around. They have tight defense. But yeah, I would say that if they had to pick something to improve, it'd be just to continue to gel, continue to buy into their coach's system. Vince Bellissimo is an excellent coach. I hope we can have him on the podcast at some point, though I have not reached out about to him about that directly. I know Blake Ricci, the GM, is meaning to come on. And they have, like, and Blake Ricci is an excellent GM, so if they are lacking anything, they're going to go and get it. So this is, again, this is an excellently coached team, well-managed team. I think that that speaks into their record. The ironic thing is a record of 15-4-2-2. I mean, you do the math, they're actually kind of, so that's 15 wins. Let's see if I can remember this. Four losses, two ties, two overtime losses, if I'm remembering the order of how that works, right?
That is, yep, you got it right.
So that's pretty solid. Like, that's a winning record, even if you count them all as losses, and they got points on a significant portion of them. I've seen them battle back repeatedly. I think that a couple of their losses are more attributed to the fact that they just didn't quite make it all the way back. Yeah, no, I like the Junior Canadians. I expect to see them and the Patriots clashing in the playoffs, hopefully not in the first round, hopefully deep. So I get, but yeah, yeah. Speaking about the Patriots, why don't you leave me off here?
Yeah, the Patriots are the next team on this list. And if you guys are wondering about the OJ coverage, Doug does the announcing, in-house announcing for the Royals, the Junior Canadians, and the Patriots, the Toronto Patriots. So that's why we focus on these teams. I've had a lot of people reach out and ask why we don't do this and don't do that. If you want your team talked about, just shoot us a line. I'm sure we can pick up something. There is a little section we have just after this that we are going to do some shout outs. But we focus on these teams because Doug is around them all the time and can give you in-depth coverage on these guys. And it's not that we can't dig up stuff on the inner squads, but he just has a personal touch with these guys. So just so everyone knows, and if you're a new listener wondering why these are our teams we focus on, there you have it. So to the Toronto Patriots, well, Doug, a 12-game win streak is a beautiful thing.
And
19-2-0-1. With that record, Jocelyn has his team humming on all cylinders, and their last loss, believe it or not, is coming at the hands of the Junior Canadians. What magic has Jocelyn caught in the bottle here?
I mean, I think he'd say himself that this team is playing above themselves a little bit, but in the best possible way. As much as I was talking about the Junior Canadians kind of needing to buy in, this is a team that bought in right from game one. These guys want to be here. They support each other. I had the privilege of going into the room for a few brief moments to hand out some players' card, make sure I got their name pronunciations down, and some music preferences and stuff like that. And honestly, it was like walking into a men's league dressing room. I mean that in the best possible way. The atmosphere and environment in there, everybody knew everybody already. And, you know, I think that was game three, because I don't think we started at home. I can't remember at the moment. But it was like right at the beginning of the year. The guys were gelling already. Like it was walking into a group of best friends. It's just, there's so much support for each other there. A great example is Noah Hippolyte-Smith. When he got his first goal, I think it was like 2 weeks ago now, 3 weeks ago maybe. He got his first goal of the season and stuff, and the bench went ballistic. I wish I had a clip of that I could play right now, but the bench just went like nuts. They were so supportive, so happy that this guy got his first point. Such a hardworking player. They all want to see each other succeed, and they're all there to support each other. And on top of that, they have skill. They have character. You know, they've got so their captain is Marcel Perichaeo, and he does just an absolutely excellent job leading the team. They've got guys like Josiah DeGazin, who's just a hardworking forward. They're led in points by a guy named Jackson Alexiev, who's got 28 points on the season. He's right up there with Teverberg and a few of the other point leaders across the league. But they have they're really balanced scoring. So I'm just gonna go. I'm gonna take a quick count of how many players they have with four or more goals. And they've got 14 guys with four or more goals. Significant number of those with six or more. Everybody on this team scores. Everybody on this team sets each other up. They work systems. They've bought into what Jocelyn does. They've got solid defensemen. Like Dirk Stadig has 21 points as a defenseman. Parakeo again, that captain, he's got 12 assists. You know, you look up and you see a defenseman with 12 assists. I think he's third or fourth on the team. There's a bunch of guys tied for 13 assists. But yeah, just it's a team that from top to bottom, they get effort out of every single player. Even guys that are less skilled maybe aren't quite clicking as much. Guys like I'm not going to name names in that fashion, but there's a couple of them. But they buy in for every shift. They go up, they step up when they have to. One guy I'll call out for his toughness is Ethan Eliopoulos. There was a game earlier in the season. It may have even been that Junior Canadians game where he blocked, I think, 4 or 5 shots on one shift. You know, that type of character that early in the season. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, you just don't see it that often. So Jocelyn is much to credit. I'm going to give props to Mike Daly, their assistant coach, for exactly the same thing. Guys that have, the coaches have bought in. As much as you talk about players having to buy in, the coaches are all in on this team. Patrick Piacentini, the other coach that they brought on this year, these guys, they're ready for anything. I don't know that they would have as solid of an explanation for how they've been able to win 12 games in a row beyond character. Character and distributed scoring is what it comes down to. I could just run down the list of the guys on this team, and they're all character guys. Every single one. Like, it's something you just don't see that often. The last time I honestly saw something like this from a hockey team in the OJHL, at least one that I worked for, like, and had as close of a look as I'm getting at these guys, it was the first year that I was in the league with Jason Forche and, of course, the Toronto Patriots, coming off of a Buckland Cup win, going into another Buckland Cup win. So I my first year in the season was their second Buckland Cup in a row. And the character that was on that team, it reminds me of this team, or vice versa, however you want to look at it. So if you want to watch hockey, I highly recommend you pick up a Toronto Patriots game. The excitement is there. The pace is there. Their last two games, including against the Markham Royals and the North York Rangers, were both come-from-behind victories. They were down 2-0 to the Royals. I think it was 3-1 at one point, and came back and won in overtime. And then they came back and beat North York in regulation just on pure heart. Like, seriously, like, I think I've said this about half a dozen times already talking about the Patriots. The amount of effort this team gets, it's such a contrast. So when I go and I watch the Maple Leafs, and you guys hear me rant about the Maple Leafs not putting in the effort, not showing heart, usually, most of the time, it's a Saturday night when I sit down to watch the Leafs like that, and I'm coming off of a Patriots game because their home games are Saturday night. So I go from watching these guys just kill themselves trying to win a hockey game to watching the Leafs. It just makes it even more frustrating. So if you want to make the Leafs more entertaining, I highly recommend you don't watch the Toronto Patriots. But if you want to see some damn good hockey, it's on Hockey TV. You can come out to Westwood Arena. It's $10-$12. We just had an excellent Pink in the Rink bake sale and auction jersey. I think they're doing the auctions for a jersey giveaway. That's ongoing. You can get I believe they're signed Pink in the Rink jerseys from the players. They're signed by the players, and those are going to be auctioned off, I think, until December sometime. But yeah, check it out. I can't recommend the Patriots enough. Either of the both of the Toronto teams are absolutely humming. They're a ton of fun to watch. You got a Junior Canadians, you got a NHL draft pick potentially. Patriots, you probably have a bunch of guys that are going to end up in Division I hockey in the NCAA. I wouldn't be surprised, based purely on effort. So great hockey. I can't speak enough to the amount of effort that you get out of watching the Toronto Patriots play.
Well, it's the OJHL for a reason, Doug. It is great hockey. It's exciting hockey, and it's the league of choice. Like I said, the last thing that I want to do is the huge shout out, and that's to all the division leaders so far, guys. Don't worry, everybody else in the league, you got your chance to still step it up. But I want to give a huge shout out to the first year upstart Collingwood Colts for holding down their division, the Burlington Cougars, the Toronto Patriots, of course, Doug, tip your cap there, and of course the Trenton Golden Hawks. Keep your ear here for more OJ news, more division leaders, and just more stuff about the OJ in general. If you have anything you want to hear about from the OJ, and I'm looking at you, Milton Menace, because I know you're going to throw something our way about this one, be sure to hit us up, and we will make sure we get you focused and on the show. All right, guys, it's been a long one. It's been a long week in hockey land, in Leaf land. Let's kick back, enjoy some offside talk for listening, and thank you very much for tuning in. We'll catch you guys next week.